These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach anseo gur féidir é a chur in uaigh ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarrann go raibh an orthchar san i lis dúthail agus gimine fnacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin ann dardarach sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, on today's episode, I speak with Leinster and Ireland prop Andrew Porter, who's an ambassador for the Irish Cancer Society. On this episode, Andrew talks about his state of mind after their exit from the World Cup.
I was quite naive to think that, yeah, like this, we'll keep winning. And you can get caught up in that quite easily, like a small bit complacent in that sense. Post-World Cup, it hit me quite hard because I suppose I didn't prepare as well for that.
Letting go of the past going into the Six Nations.
I was questioning, was I cut out to play professional rugby when I came home? Like, there was so much of that kind of constantly going around in my head that I was convincing myself that that was the case, but it clearly isn't. That's the thing with self-doubt. It can creep up on you like that. And yeah, I think it's something I'm really trying to work on.
And their hopes of winning a historic back-to-back Grand Slam.
You always want to be winning, so like there's, you don't want to say it, but like you don't want to jinx it, but yeah, like obviously we're pushing for that Grand Slam again and doing what kind of no other team has done and back to back.
Well, Andrew, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, you, great to be here.
You had an early start this morning. Tell me.
Yeah, like I've been up, I'd say since 2:30 this morning. Like not by my own choice. Yeah, I think sometimes I can wake up in the middle of the night and then there's no getting back to sleep, so I just have to start the day then and just kind of bite the bullet and go.
So you started your day at 2:30 this morning.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Oh, lots of housework. Like,
Your wife must be delighted.
There's not much open that I can really do outside the house, so I was there.
And will you have a bit of a sleep later in the day?
No, see, here we go, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it something that would happen regularly? Or?
No, it's quite rare that it happens. Like, it went through kind of bad patch of like just not sleeping after the World Cup was probably the last time. Like, But I think that was just because you're coming from such a different environment. You're coming back home. And it's such kind of a shock. You're coming from living in your team environment with all the lads. You're kind of coming home where you're coming off such a high. I think that could be that. But maybe I'm still from the high after the Italian game. That's kind of like it's kind of hit me now. But it happens quite rarely for me.
And you were saying there in the week after the World Cup exit that you only got around 5 hours sleep that week?
Yeah. Like, wow. That was a tough...
Is that just your mind into overdrive?
I think so. I think, like, especially after that, like, I think probably just overthinking. And your mind's thinking of every possible scenario of what you could have done, I suppose, in that in the last game and everything like that. So, Yeah, it was a tough enough weekend. It was a bit of a shock to the system coming back home. Like,
and when do you go back to normal sleep? Like, when are you able to kind of box that off and just leave it? And, you know, and I suppose by being able to sleep more, that kind of tells you perhaps if you're gradually getting over something as well, does it?
Exactly. Yeah. Like I would have spoken to like a lot of the coaches and like a lot of other people in my family and stuff, and like they said, it's quite normal for obviously when you're playing at such a high level. And to come from such a high of being in the World Cup and that all that excitement, and then coming back home, and when you've been in camp for maybe like 4 months, and that's your kind of routine. You're in that's such a routine of a day to day. Like it's so regimented, and then coming home where you feel a small bit lost after that. Yeah, it was just a huge shock to the system, I think, coming home. And hopefully I'm over it now, I think, though.
Yeah, and how are you sleeping? How was your sleep before the night before a game? You know, is that okay? Or
yeah, you'd be quite good before a game. I wouldn't really be trying to overthink it too much, like until it happens, like until the game comes about. But I wouldn't really lose much sleep the night before. It'd usually be the night after. Where it'd be like the adrenaline is still going and you're still up, especially those late night kickoffs where you wouldn't be finished till maybe 11 or 12 o'clock, especially like we saw in Marseille where it's a 9 o'clock kickoff. So yeah, you wouldn't be sleeping for a while then.
And what was it like on Sunday evening after the win over Italy? Were you able to kick back, have a few drinks? How do you unwind?
Yeah, like I think that's the special thing about this team. Like when you're working, you're on, and you're putting in the hours of training and doing all your nutrition and everything. But like, I think when you're a part of such a special team like this, it's important to be able to enjoy yourselves, enjoy each other's company. And I think that's something Faz and the rest of the coaches really try and encourage us to do, especially when we've been away from our families for so long. It's important to be able to get all of our partners and our families in after the games and be able to enjoy time with them and be able to mix with them after games. And I think it's something that's really special about this team, where like we can enjoy ourselves and it's not too strict, like in terms of drinking bans and stuff like that there might be with other teams. So it's nice to be able to kind of enjoy yourself after a game and kind of relax and know you've put in a good shift and be able to, yeah, enjoy a few drinks after.
You don't strike me as a coppers going group. Now, I could be wrong here.
Sometimes,
Yeah,
we might have ventured in on Sunday night.
Did you go on Sunday night?
Yeah.
And you told me you all went to a house.
A few of us might have ventured in.
Right.
It's quite empty on a Sunday night all the same.
Yeah, that must have been... Who do you gravitate towards? You know, when you're in a big group like that, who do you always find yourself with, like at the end of a night or whatever?
Usually the props kind of stick together quite well, but like I'd be fairly close with a lot of like the... obviously with the Leinster lads, like Caelan and Hugo and Ronan Kelleher, like they're all housemates and they like I get on fairly well with them. Like Ronan Kelleher is my roommate usually when we're away from home, so yeah. I get on very well with him. I don't think he can really say the same when we're roomed together because I'm a snorer. It's kind of a love hate relationship there at the moment. But yeah,
what does he say to you in the morning if you've had a particularly
he sets up like a couple of bottles on the side of his bed,
right?
Where it's just stuff to throw at me in the middle of the night.
Right, has ammunition ready to go.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a good plan.
Yeah, it's not so good for me though.
No. Especially if you tend to say sometimes to wake up at 2:30 in the morning, you're like, let me have
Then I'm not getting back to sleep without. So it's just, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Well, look, you're here to help promote the Irish Cancer Society's Daffodil Day next month. And Andrew, this is obviously a subject very close to your heart.
Yeah. It's something that's obviously affected my family and also a lot of people. A lot of my family, like my extended family, and also a lot of my friends as well. So I think like there's a lot of people who are affected by cancer and in many ways, like whether it's like directly one of their family members or someone they know. So it's an incredibly important charity for me to be a part of. And yeah, like it's such an important day, Daffodil Day, because they're only given I think 5% funding by the government, so they rely on the public and the generosity of the Irish people to generate most of their money, so they can then put that to good use and put it to all the great services that they do.
And you've obviously been so open in the past about your mental health in the past and your eating disorder, and obviously you're one of the main players on the Netflix documentary series. First of all, what kind of reaction did you get from that?
Yeah, it was mainly positive. Like it was quite strange kind of seeing myself on Netflix, and it kind of took a bit for me to actually go and watch it myself.
Did it? Yeah.
I was going to watch it with the sound off, the subtitles on, and then I just forced myself just to watch it, like just get it over with. But yeah, like I was delighted with how it turned out, and I got some great feedback from it. And I think, like, hopefully by myself being able to talk about these things and kind of be able to shine a light on the other side of my life that people don't see. Like, obviously people see me as the rugby player. But there's another side to me that people might not see, that, and maybe a lot of people are going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. But by me talking about it, hopefully it gives them the confidence, and maybe something in them to help go and get help and talk about it themselves. And yeah, I think it's mental health is so important, especially in today. It's something that affects everyone.
And how do you look back on yourself as that young boy trying to cope with all that at the time?
Yeah, like it's quite mad kind of looking back on that and to how far I've come now. In the moment, like back then, I don't think I would have ever dreamed of being a professional rugby player. I don't think I was thinking about it like anything other than kind of what I was going through at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to kind of get yourself out of that mindset. But yeah, like I had incredible family around me. I had incredible friends in school when I was going through kind of my hardest times, and they all got me through it in the end. So and rugby as well got me through it. Something that I always loved doing since I was 4 years old, when my dad brought me down to play for Old Wesley. Like it was rugby that I just loved doing, no matter like if it was at the end of the worst school day ever or anything. I'd always enjoy going out and playing with my mates. So having rugby there is huge.
Yeah, of course. And you know, did you feel it was something that came on you suddenly, or was it a slow process, or what was that like for you as you were trying to figure out what was happening to you at the time?
Yeah, like I suppose mental health is something that can sneak up on you. I suppose it's something that can kind of slowly chip away at you, and then kind of suddenly you're like I was about half the size I was. And then you don't notice it until like it's nearly like you're kind of so far down the road, and then you had people kind of telling you all along that like, oh, like, are you okay, but you don't want to talk about it at all. So it is something that can kind of chip away at you in over a long period of time, and then suddenly you realize, oh, maybe I actually do need to help, maybe I do need to talk about this with someone. It was kind of a slow burner for me, I suppose.
Yeah, and you probably, did you even realise at the time the control it had over you?
No, like, because like I was so young.
Yeah.
So like I don't think when you're that age, you're really very well equipped to kind of deal with things like loss. Like I wasn't, I was 12 when I lost my mother, so I didn't, I couldn't really like articulate the whole situation myself. Like, and I thought at the time that that's what I should do, because I was a man, like I was a boy at the time, so I was like, oh, I shouldn't talk about this, and it'll all go away eventually. And I think that's what a lot of people, the stigma that that men shouldn't talk about it, but in reality, it's men that are 75% of the suicide rates in Ireland, and I think across the world. So it's more important than ever for men to speak up and to talk to someone and go get help.
And was there any point that was kind of a turning point, as it were, that kind of led you on to kind of the recovery from it?
I'm not sure if there was like a specific kind of point for me. I suppose it was more just kind of, I could see what my family was going through as well, and then kind of my own struggles on top of that. Like, I kind of felt like I was kind of adding to that. And it wasn't until I kind of looked around and kind of looked at myself, really, that I kind of realized how much my family cared for me. Because at the time you feel so like on your own, you feel like quite lonely. You feel like you're going through all these things on your own. But that wasn't the case at all. I had my family and friends there all along. And then it took me like a few years to actually realize that. And then, yeah, I suppose I wanted to do it for them. Yeah.
And is it like, you know, the eating disorder, the anorexia, is that something you're constantly trying to keep on top of as well, just to make sure if there's anything, you know, that you're continuing on that road to recovery? Is that something that you kind of think about or?
Yeah, like I suppose it's like I constantly think about it because that person is the reason I am to where I am today, I suppose. And I suppose like mental health can, like, it can always kind of come back and it can always kind of creep in, like kind of self-doubt, especially as a professional athlete, self-doubt and kind of outside noise. You can start listening to that very quickly. So it's something you always kind of have to constantly stay on top of, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. And like, as you said, you know, as a professional rugby player, like when you're going into something like a World Cup and you're trying to stay positive, you know, with the team but you know the way sport is that everything doesn't always work out. So do you almost have to have a mechanism in place as well in case it doesn't work out and, you know, it doesn't go the way you want it to go to kind of safeguard your feelings and your emotions at that particular point then as well?
Yeah, like we work a lot with our mental skills coach, Gary Keegan, in the IRFU. And it's only really now where I've started kind of like paying attention to it because it was before, like I suppose we were, well, I was quite naive to think that, yeah, like this will keep winning. I don't need to worry about it. And you can get caught up in that quite easily, like in kind of a small bit complacent in that sense. But I suppose it kind of like post-World Cup, it hit me quite hard because I suppose I didn't prepare as well for that. Like I had my experiences with loss like throughout the season, mm-hmm. with obviously two Champions Cup finals with Leinster and everything. So like I have experience, like plenty of experience in winning as well as losing. So but it is something, yeah, like it's all part and parcel in the sport, I suppose, and in any professional sport.
And so after you came home and you mentioned about the sleeping there, how else does it manifest itself?
I suppose, yeah, like I said, like self-doubt and kind of you're kind of questioning your self-worth and even after, like, I was questioning was I cut out to play professional rugby when I came home. Like, there was so much of that kind of constantly going around in my head that I was, I was convincing myself that was the case, but it clearly isn't.
And how did you get yourself out of that then?
I suppose just getting back to playing and getting back to doing what I loved. Like, I suppose, like, I had 3 weeks off after the World Cup, and it was nearly the worst having time off because I was kind of with my thoughts too much. Where I could, like, if I was training and kind of with something to work towards, it would take my mind off, and I could go back to doing something I enjoy again.
You know, you're one of the best loose head props in the world. It's unbelievable in some ways that somebody like you would have such strong doubts about your place, you know, in the rugby world like that.
Yeah, like I think it's one of those things that, like, you can, I think you're your own worst critic. Like, it's I'm a firm believer in that. Like, it's because you can make up a lot of stuff about yourself and kind of
like what,
like you can nearly convince yourself that like you don't have a place in rugby. Like, I was nearly convincing myself when I came back. So but that's the thing with self-doubt. It can creep up on you like that. And I think it's something I'm really trying to work on, especially with our coaches and stuff in Ireland. And
did you talk to somebody like Gary Keegan afterwards? Like, do you like wait until you go into camp to talk to these people, or are they available to you like in the months afterwards before you go into camp?
Yeah, like they're always available.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like again, I thought I could deal with it myself.
Okay.
It was one of those, it's kind of one of those cycles where you're just like, yeah, this, I'm a professional athlete, I should be able to deal with this. Yeah.
Isn't that mad though? Because, you know, you work with Gary for so long and everything that, you know, you think that you would go, okay, I need to talk to Gary, rather than thinking you can deal with it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I suppose it's another one of those things where like maybe like you think you can handle everything. But yeah, like it's one of those things where like you have so many people at your disposal to that want to help you. And I suppose that goes for anything. Like there is always so many people there who want to help you, who want to give you a dig out.
Is it a pride thing, or where is it kind of almost stemming from, or that would make you think that you can deal with, you know, that by yourself?
I suppose, yeah, probably is a pride thing. Probably like I don't think anyone wants to, sometimes people don't want to admit they need help. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's been kind of like my story of my life so far, but it's proven in the past that it's worked for me. But I think, yeah, like you said, it can creep in where your pride kind of takes over a small bit, and you're trying to deal with everything yourself, and sometimes it can kind of get too much to handle.
Yeah, and again, for that kind of turning point, was there kind of a light bulb moment where you came out of that, or how did that work for you?
I suppose like it was getting back to playing with Leinster. It was getting back training and kind of enjoying it, like enjoying being there with the team. Like, it was the environment. I just love being part of the team environment where you're in there with your mates and your coaches, and everyone's trying to help each other. And yes, it's just a great environment to be a part of.
Yeah, so when you're in camp now with Andy Farrell and Gary Keegan's there, how much is mental work mixed in with your physical work? Like, what's the ratio almost like? Because we speak of this Irish team as being very resilient, the way you've come back from the World Cup and the opening two games of the Six Nations. How mixed in is it? Like, is it a case of ye all talking to Gary individually, or is it all kind of in together? What way does that work?
Yeah, like we'd have Gary would speak to the team as well as having kind of
individual
kind of slots. Because obviously everyone works in different ways. Everyone learns at different in different ways as well. So like it's quite tailored to each player, I suppose. But yeah, it's quite balanced in terms of the mental load and the physical load. The coaches obviously want to keep us as fresh as possible going into games. And they also don't want us to be mentally burned out. So it's striking that balance that I think the coaches have done really well in camp. And you're constantly, it's such an enjoyable environment to be a part of. Where you're not burned out all the time, and you're mentally and physically fresh coming into big games when it counts.
So when you work with Gary, or when you kind of say positive stuff to yourself, what tunes you in? Like, what gets you just right on it going into a game?
I suppose just like having my mental prep done.
Yeah.
Like having,
what does that involve exactly?
Like I used to be someone who doesn't take a lot of like notes. Mm-hmm. I'd used to be like, I'd always find like in a meeting if I was writing, I wasn't listening. But like, I suppose like I'd do my own mental prep, and I'd have my notebook now myself.
Just going through stuff.
Just going through scenarios for visualization. And you're preparing for nearly every eventuality in the game. Because you're trying at the end, like you have to be, it's such a kind of, there's so many unknowns, there's so many variables in the game.
So you try and go through all scenarios.
Trying to prepare for all kind of situations, and just kind of trying to be as adaptable as possible. And preparing yourself mentally for the battle that's coming up, basically. And kind of, I suppose once I have all my kind of mental areas ticked off, a lot of the physical stuff will follow.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I find that works quite well for me.
I mean, for so many of us after the World Cup and going into the Six Nations, I mean, even directly after the World Cup, it was like, oh, so disappointed. Can you imagine what the players are feeling like? So when did it all switch for you going into the Six Nations? I mean, if somebody had told you a few days after the New Zealand defeat, you'd go to France in the Six Nations, put on a record scoring margin, finish the opening two rounds with 10 points at the top of the table, you know, the difference back then between, like, how were you able to be on that level of mental pitch in France, a team that were probably seen struggling after the World Cup?
Yeah, like it was kind of crazy coming into the Six Nations camp, like when at the end of January, it was like nothing had happened nearly in the World Cup. Everyone was just like buzzing to get in. Everyone was so excited to get back to work and do what we know we're capable of. Because we've got like incredible players across the board in this team. So I think everyone was just insanely excited and motivated to get back to work. And obviously we had our eyes on France in the first game.
But were you on the same page as Andy Farrell? Remember him saying at the Six Nations launch, I'm over the World Cup. And it was like, oh my goodness. It didn't feel like just a message to the media. It felt like almost a message to you guys. So when you hear your head coach going, I'm over it, you know, I'm over the World Cup, you know, this is, you know, a new time, you know, what did that feel like for you? And was that the kind of messaging? What was the messaging coming from Andy when he got into camp?
I suppose, yeah, like that was basically the whole thing. Like, because as Andy understands better than everyone, because he's obviously been through as a player, he understands the ups and downs of the sport. And yeah, that was the biggest thing for him. Like it was letting go of the past, because that's the thing that was going to be holding us back. Obviously you have to learn from what's happened, but just kind of letting go of that so we can move on and focus completely on the next task at hand and focus on France, which was our first game. And I think when you have a coach and a leader like that who believes so strongly in something like that, I think it's great for the players, because like it's easy for a player to kind of hold on to your own individual performances that might have happened in the past. But I think when you have a coach like that telling you, like, don't worry about that, we'll focus on the next thing, we'll focus on just getting better and focus on bringing out the best in the team.
And was that when you were like totally, I mean, game against New Zealand, put to bed?
Yeah. I was like, because anytime I come into camp, I'm buzzing. Like my wife is like, oh, you can't wait to get out of the door. You can't wait to like go back into camp. Like it's because the environment that's been created for us and by the coaches, and that's been kind of cultivated by ourselves. Yeah, I think it's great to be a part of something like that, and such a positive and it's a great atmosphere in camp, always.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. Ron O'Gara said in a recent Left Wing podcast that probably in the past that it's not really an Irish thing to expect excellence year in, year out, that might be more of a New Zealand culture. But that seems to be something ye are building here.
Yeah, like there's, like we talk about as a team kind of inspiring the nation and like hopefully inspiring the next generation of rugby players and not even rugby players, hope, like inspiring just people at home and trying to give them, like people at home, something to be proud of. Like you said, like, yeah, I think it's quite unknown for an Irish team, like as like we've seen, like as history shows us, like it's quite uncommon for like an Irish team to be doing so well like this. But yeah, like it's something we pride ourselves on and putting in hard work and training that we can go and deliver results in games. So yeah, like it's incredible to be a part of something like this, and it's a great, I think Irish rugby's in a great place at the moment.
What makes Andy Farrell different from other coaches? Every coach is different. What makes him different?
I suppose he's obviously played the game himself. He knows kind of the stresses that can come with it. He knows kind of what anxieties players might have. Obviously you're away from your family for a while when you're in camp, so that can be tough on players. So he'll try to get families involved as much as he can in that sense. And then like he just wants to have it like an environment where people get on so well off the field that they gel so well on the pitch. So I think there's a huge emphasis on building connections between players. You might not obviously know as well, like you obviously know your own provincial team quite well, but he's encouraging those kind of deeper relationships off the field.
Is that done organically or is it?
Yeah, like it happens quite naturally in camp.
Right.
And like, yeah, it's one of the closest teams I've been a part of. Like it's, yeah, like, cause I've been part of teams in the past where like you feel a small bit on the outside, I suppose. But like this team is just like, it's incredibly well connected across the board, I think.
And how does Andy kind of balance between, he seems like the kind, you know, the father figure, you know, and then like, I've no doubt he's bloody ruthless as well at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose you have to be as a head coach. So, yeah, like he gets the balance. He strikes the balance like incredibly well, like in terms of, he's a great man manager. And he's an incredible coach as well. It's constantly looking to improve the team, improve each individual player.
Is there any particular moment that stood out to you about his man management?
It's tough now on the spot. Like it's tough on the spot, but like there's, it's just the amount of respect that I think the team has for him, that each player has for him. It's incredible, and it's just shows like how well regarded he is as a coach.
After the game last weekend, he said in one of the post-match TV interviews that he thought the scrum was the man of the match. He must have been pretty happy with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's always a plus when the scrum is going well on the day. So it's happy enough with how that went. Obviously, compared to the week before against France, where it didn't strike quite go as well for us as we planned. But it's nice to be able to kind of turn it around like that and put out a good performance.
I suppose there's been a bit of talk around that. Like, do you feel that there is that kind of negative kind of narrative, or whatever that thing may be, around your scrummaging? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, like you're always going to get some criticism somewhere, but like all I can do is work with my coaches and work with myself. Like it's something that is constantly changing. And you're always gonna come up against a different challenge week in, week out. Someone who doesn't scrummage the way you plan. Like things don't always go to plan. So it's like I was talking earlier, it's about being adaptable in the game and it's constant improvement of mine.
And I suppose after the World Cup and, you know, New Zealand there, is there kind of any fear there like that it could get into other referees' heads, or, and then that gets into your head, you know?
That's one of the things. Like it's, I can only control what I do. There's only so much I can control. I can only control myself. I can't, and it's about controlling the controllables. Like there's no point in worrying about what I can't control. So
of course. And what are you doing to try and, you know, to make sure that you have your kind of game right?
I suppose it's constantly like drilling with like John Fogarty. Like I'm constantly trying to work with him and work with other players. And like Tighe and Keane Healy, like Churchy are great lads to learn off. Like they've obviously been in the game plenty of time now, so they're great lads to learn off as well. So
And that's obviously been such a huge change for Irish rugby generally. You know, Johnny Sexton no longer there. Jack Crowley, how do you feel he's gone so far?
Yeah, he's been incredible. Like he's obviously Johnny leaving last year. Like it's there was huge boots to fill, but Jack Crowley stepped up incredibly well to it, and he's taken everything in his stride. And yeah, like it's incredible how well he's kind of slotted into that role, and you could see him growing more and more as a player. Like not even Jack, like you can see like the other out halves as well, like growing, because there's huge competition in the squad, so like they're all pushing for that. Like Harry Byrne is doing incredible now as well. Like I think it's given them all kind of like something to push for, and it's great to see like how well they're all doing. But like Jack's been, he's incredible. Like he's an incredible leader. He's a great lad off the pitch as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some criticism about his performances, completely unwarranted in my view. You know, you're kind of going, this is a guy who's just growing into the role. You know, give him a bit of space. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, like he's still a young fella. Like he's he got his first test try there the other day against Italy. So it's he's taken to it incredibly well. And I think obviously you're always going to get, there's always going to be that pressure and I suppose that criticism from kind of the outside, but he's quite good at kind of shutting that out and getting on with things. And I think that's, he's shown that in his performance against France and against Italy there last weekend as well.
Has Andy Farrell kind of themed this season? Does he do that? I mean, you're now 2 games, 2 wins, trying to do something no team has done before and win back-to-back Six Nations Grand Slams. That's kind of enough almost, isn't it?
You always want to be winning. So like there's, and like, you don't want to say it, but like you don't want to jinx it, but obviously we're pushing for that that Grand Slam again and doing what kind of no other team has done and back to back. So it's exciting just being a part of like something like that. And but it's just that kind of that drive to keep winning. And it's obviously there's that pressure that comes with that, but it's kind of, that pressure is like a privilege in our situation, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, do you feel that, you know, by trying to do something no team has ever done before, and within that, like, do you feel you're even getting better as a team?
I suppose so, because we're constantly gauging ourselves off our own performances. So like even against France, like in Marseille, we were looking at ourselves like, geez, we left a few scores out there. We could have done so many more things better than how we did it. So like we were constantly gauging ourselves off our past performances and trying to keep pushing on from where we were. So because you're always going to have that target on your back, as obviously we're champions from last year. So you're the team to beat.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it's a good pressure to have, like, because you're always constantly trying to improve. And if you stand still, you get caught out. Like, your other teams will catch up to you. So like that's something that like you can't get complacent in this role and in this kind of high performing environment. You can't get caught standing still, because other teams are moving and other teams are trying to catch in. And like I said, we have that target on our back.
And from that guy, you know, in the week or whatever after the World Cup, kind of having those kind of self-doubts about himself to where you are now, Andrew, like, how does that make you feel, you know, and just have, is there that contentment there? How does it make you feel being and performing the way you are now again?
Yeah, like, I suppose it comes back to me, it comes back to enjoying it. I'm enjoying what I'm doing so much with the group that I'm doing it with. So it's... Yeah, there is a high level of contentment there, especially when you're winning. Back to enjoying it, it's just a great thing to be a part of, I suppose.
Well, that's a great thing to be able to say. Will you go home now and go for a bit of kip after being up at 2:30 this morning?
A few more jobs to do. So.
Do you? Well, listen, the Irish Cancer Society's Daffodil Day takes place Friday, the 22nd of January this year. Go to cancer.ie to get involved or donate. Andrew, the very best of luck to
you
and the team for the rest of the Six Nations, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.